And so as much as you may want to have the best collection there is, at the same time, it's actually kind of neat to know that there are more people out there like you.
Good morning. Jim Toronto with you, filling in for Dean Richards this morning. We'll be here till 1 p.m., hand things off to Pete McMurray then. But between then and now, as I always try to do when I fill in for Dean, I always try to pack in 5 pounds of bologna into a 1 pound bag. And so far, I think I'm doing a pretty good job. A lot of bologna. I don't know how we're doing packing it in, but we're certainly dispensing a lot of bologna and fun here at the good old radio station, WGN 720 AM. I wanted to mention once again, I had that interview just before the news with Lisa Welchel, and I just wanted to mention once again that she hosts the show Collector's Call, which is on every Sunday at 8:30 here in Chicago, as well as around the country, on Channel 23, though, locally here. It's called Collector's Call, and keep an eye open, because sometime in the next few months, the episode that we talked about, where Lisa came to my home, will be airing. And I didn't want to spill the beans. I will just tease this about it. There's the way the show goes, they feature the collection. They do have an appraiser there with you. And so they have, when you show them different items, the appraiser, you know, says, well, I think this is how much this is worth and things like that. And at the end of the show, as a little twist, the appraiser brings an item that the collector does not have, and they propose a trade, trading something from the collector's collection that he or she may trade for this other item. And you want to stick around. I hope they didn't edit this out, because I had fun with that little trade segment. So I'll just tease that. But once again, thanks to Lisa Welchel for taking some time out. And as I said, we now have a Blair Room in my home, because that's where she camped out and did her makeup and hair. So that's the Blair Room now in my house. So anyway, now we will take a little stroll to the Pop Culture Club. And as we like to do, we have a pop culture guru and a good friend of mine, Mick Kaler, on the line. How you doing, Mick?
Morning, pal. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Just trying to keep warm. How about you out there in the burbs?
Oh, it's ice cold.
I know, isn't it crazy?
Like you said earlier to Dean, you just look outside and say, I know it's cold.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is a city, of in Chicagoland. You know, the city itself has almost 3 million people. The surrounding suburbs, it's almost 7 or 8 million. And I'm right down here in the heart of downtown Chicago. Here it is 11 o'clock in the morning, and there's like 3 cars driving around. Nobody walking.
No, nobody wants to be anywhere. They want to stay inside.
Yeah, it's like Vanilla Sky, that Tom Cruise movie. There's nobody walking on the streets.
Or the Omega Man.
Yeah, or even the Devil's Advocate. They did that too as well. But,
right.
But yeah, so that's all the reason for you to stay in, have your nice warm beverage, your comfortable chair, and just keep it tuned here to 720 a.m. Chicago. And AM in Chicago. AM Chicago with Rob Hart. Remember that?
Oh, sure.
So lots of stuff going on today on Sunday. This is perfect if you want to hibernate and stay away from the outer limits or the outer elements. We've got some really fun entertainment things on TV tonight. The SAG Awards, the Screen Actor Guild Awards are on tonight, which are there both. It's interesting. They have them on both TBS and TNT for some reason.
Yeah. They cover TV and movies.
Yeah, 7 o'clock. And those really are somewhat of a precursor for the Oscars, in that they are voted on by the members of the Screen Actors Guild. So they are these awards that are voted by the peers of the actors and the actresses, as opposed to the Academy, which is much more widespread of people that not only are actors and actresses, but there are other people in the business and executives and things like that. So a lot of times the SAG Awards are a pretty good indicator of who may win the Oscar.
Or at least who these peers between each other like, as far as who they think are the best performances.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of times, because it's the first one of the year and it's become a little notorious, a little nasty, everybody talks about the Golden Globes like, oh, it's a precursor. The Golden Globes are not a precursor to the Oscars. Very seldom. And as we saw this year, many people that were nominated and even won for Golden Globes were not even nominated for Oscars.
Right, didn't make the cut at all. Yeah, the Golden Globes, because of the Hollywood foreign press, it's just a whole different animal, a whole different take on things.
Yeah, it's 100 foreign journalists who many times are very starstruck. They vote for the biggest stars. You saw people like Beyonce and Taylor Swift get nominations for Golden Globes. Jennifer Lopez. They did not get Oscar nomination. So
yeah.
A lot of times they like to promote it like it's a precursor. Perfect example, the winner of the Best Actor, who was Taron Egerton for playing Elton John in Rocketman, did not get nominated as Best Actor for the Oscars. Now, he won the Golden Globe.
Right.
In the musical and comedy category, not even nominated. So the if you want to get a little insight as to the way things may go on what I believe it's September or February 9th, when the Oscars are on, take a look at the Screen Actors Guild tonight on PBS and TNT. And I wanted to just go over a few of the nominees, because it's really interesting. Now, there's been a lot of talk when the Oscar nominations came out, once again, how male-dominated and how non-minority nominated most
right,
of
it was
the
pretty white and pretty male. Yeah
So I don't know if we're going to continue now to this year see many of the complaints, you know, when people present or when they win and talking about the disparity and the need for diversity. I don't know how many times we can keep talking about that. It either is going to happen or it isn't. It is what it is. I think the Academy has made efforts to do that, but I don't know if it's just either a certain year there's more movies that happen to be directed by men, or it's just that the Academy does have a bias. I don't know where this lands, because I know the Academy has certainly tried very hard to mix things up and become more diverse. You know, 2 or 3 years ago, that was the huge rallying cry, and here we are, and once again, one of the same complaints.
Well, the one in the Academy that I did understand, though, I saw Little Women, and Greta Gerwig, who directed that, should have been nominated for an Oscar.
Right, yeah. So, and that was probably one of the main snubs that people mentioned.
That was a pretty blatant one. You know, some people talked about the Jennifer Lopez thing. Hey, I saw Hustlers. It was an okay movie. This was not something you get nominated for an Oscar for. There's no way.
But, Dane, what's so interesting is that Jennifer Lopez was nominated for tonight's Screen Actors Guild Award.
She's got it up for a female actor in supporting role. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's going to be interesting because there's 8 nominated Oscar films. And tonight in the they don't really give the film, because these are about the actors, they don't really give the film the best picture, but that designation goes to the outstanding performance by a cast.
Sure.
And so this year the nominees for the Screen Actors Guild, which is on tonight, is Bombshell, the movie about Roger Ailes and Fox News, The Irishman, the Martin Scorsese film with Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, Jojo Rabbit, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Quentin Tarantino film, and Parasite, which is the Korean film. But
which I saw yesterday.
Yeah, now what'd you think of that?
It will blow your mind.
I haven't seen this, but everybody who tells me about
it, anyone listening, okay.
Everybody says the same thing.
Don't read anything about it. Don't read any reviews.
I haven't.
Don't look at any trailers. Just go see the movie. And I'll give you an example, okay? Years and years ago, I remember when I saw Fargo, like the first week it came out.
Yeah,
and there was no buzz on it or anything.
Right.
When the movie ended, the lights went up in the theater, and everyone just sat in their chairs and looked at each other and went,
"What was that?
Wow, we saw something unusual."
Yeah, what was that?
Okay, yesterday at the movie theater, same thing.
Really?
Everyone just sat and went, "Wow." And it's just... It's hard to describe, because you don't see a movie like this. You know, when you hear Parasite, you think it's a sci-fi or a slasher movie. No, just see it And the less I talk about it, the more you'll enjoy it. Trust me.
Wow. So even and now it does. Now we should mention that it's a Korean film. It does have subtitles, right?
It's all in subtitles. And again, subtitles are not hard. I mean, we all know how to read, and it's, you know, one or two lines here and there, and then it goes on. But it's, trust me, it is worth seeing. I really enjoy it. It's one of my favorite movies of the year.
Well, here's the thing, too. When you're talking about subtitles, you know, I wouldn't casually say, oh, we all know how to read subtitles. We all know how to read subtitles if the subtitles are correctly placed on the screen.
Sure.
And I don't know. I mean, so when you, I would assume that these are very legible and they're not hidden in sometimes.
It's very obvious, yeah. And it's very easy to tell on it and everything. And when they switch, you know, people talking and all that, trust me, you'll just follow it along. And I know what you're talking about. Sometimes it is very quietly done.
Oh, I hate it.
It's a little bit off in its rhythm, but this one was not like that.
Well, it's not that it's even off in the rhythm. It's the way they place them on the screen. My wife and I last night, there's a show that on HBO that just returned as a quasi sequel to the show with Jude Law called The Young Pope.
Okay, yeah.
This is the new Pope, and they didn't show him yet. But John Malkovich will be a part of the show. He wasn't on the first episode. They had subtitles because, you know, they're talking Latin. It's obviously in the Vatican, and so to be more authentic, they had them speaking, in Latin or in Italian. And when they put the white subtitles without any kind of even, you know, black shading around the letters,
contrast, yeah.
The words were right in the middle of, you know, don't forget, the Pope wears a white outfit.
Right, he's all in white, he's got gold around him, yeah.
Yeah, and so everything the Pope said was right in the middle of his chest. And so, I mean, rather than just pausing every 2 seconds, you are sitting there going, I think I have an idea, but I can't keep stopping the thing. We just let it go, and we may have missed some key dialogue because the subtitles were buried visually in the clothes of the people. And it's like, can't you see that you can't read that?
Sure, yeah, you got to think of that because it's a visual presentation and people have to read that through.
Yeah, so that bugs the heck out of me. But
yeah, so don't worry about that with Parasite. Like I said, I don't want to say anything more. I've told it to a couple friends. I was like, look, just see it and then get back to me and we'll go from there because it's just a fun thing.
Well, that would be interesting because that is nominated tonight on the SAG Awards, which is on tonight on TBS and TNT starting at 7 o'clock. And I believe on TNT, then they rerun it immediately afterward, about 9 or 9:15, they'll rerun it again. So if you miss it at 7, you could catch it again on TNT. But it's live at 7 o'clock on both TBS and TNT. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning, talking to Mick Kaler on the line here in the Pop Culture Club. We'll continue talking about movies, television, everything else right after this. No switching. And I should mention that my guest here on the phone right now in the Pop Culture Club is Mick Kaler, and you are a regular contributor to the WGN Morning Show. You write and produce and even sometimes sing some parody songs that they feature on the WGN Morning News.
That's right, and we did one about a week and a half ago with me and my partner Al Flash. We took the Taylor Swift song Mean and changed it to Dean in honor of Dean Richards, and we dug up some really cool video clips, and Al's daughter Michelle sang lead on it, and not to brag, but I think it was one of our bigger hits with the morning show. Dean was thrilled with it. He tweeted it out, and everybody just had a really good reaction to it.
Well, I'm looking here. I don't see that on the Oscar list.
I know. Maybe next year.
Okay.
Although, it's too late for this year's consideration.
Oh, is that what it was?
Okay. That's right. Original song, yeah.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that. If you watch the WGN Morning News, you'll see and hear some of Mick Kaler's creative work there. So I just wanted to mention, so Parasite, the film that you were talking about, the Korean film that you like so much, that is nominated tonight for a Screen Actors Guild and is also nominated for Best Picture for the Oscars that will be on February 9th. Now, would you say that given that this is a subtitled foreign film,
right?
There's no English in it. Do you think that it might have a chance to either win tonight at the Screen Actors Guild or even at the Oscars, or is it just a little too far out there?
It might be a little too far out there, especially, and I heard Dean talk a lot about 1917, which I haven't seen yet, but I'm going to. I think 1917 is your lock for Best Picture.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Just because,
and that is not nominated.
And I know a lot of people have talked about it. And again, it's not an actor thing. It's more just the story itself and how it's presented. I think that's going to be your winner for sure for the Oscars. I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, that's not nominated for a SAG Award tonight.
Right. Right.
To your point about the Oscars, I think that because it did win the Golden Globe, and once again, you have to remember it won the Golden Globe. If you look at the winners of the Golden Globe, remember, as we talked about before, it's voted on by about 100 foreign press journalists. If you look at the majority of the winners of the Golden Globes a few weeks ago, most of them were foreign actors, actresses, directors, films.
Yeah.
That's where the bent will be.
It could be.
You know, so 1917 won for Best Picture because what the heck? It's about World War One.
And at a war in a foreign land, all
yeah.
that.
So what will be interesting to see if that does relay and relate to people here in the United States, because I have a sense, even though I wasn't knocked out by it, I saw it. I thought it was
you have seen it, okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, I wasn't knocked out, but I believe there is a small momentum going for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
After that Golden Globes sweep, like
yeah, everybody,
going, you know?
Yeah, everybody now seems to be in love with Brad Pitt, which is fine. He deserves it. He does play a very good role in that film. And I'm just wondering, it didn't get the most nominations. The Joker actually led with 11. I can't see the Joker winning Best Picture.
No, I think Joaquin Phoenix is going to win for Best Actor.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. That seems to be a given. But I just feel I'm feeling so much of the Oscars is really a horse race, and it is political, and it is about momentum. And Once Upon a Time in America, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, just seems to, you know, it did get, I think, 10 nominations. So it was right up there with 1917 and even The Irishman. I don't know. I get a sense that there's some cool L.A. vibe going on. It's about, you know, I mean, the movie's about Los Angeles. It's about, the entertainment world to some extent, about movie making. And then, of course, the side story with the Manson murder. So I wouldn't be surprised. 1917 probably has to, as you said, probably has to be your best bet. But I would not be all that shocked if Once Upon a Time in Hollywood wins.
Yeah, it can happen. And again, they always talk about how Hollywood likes movies about Hollywood.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. So, yeah, like I said, tonight, the Screen Actors Guild Awards. What I like about the Screen Actor Guild Award presentation as well, this show is done as close to perfect as you can do a televised award show. Mm-hmm. There is very little fluff. There's no, dancing... dancing waters or tap dancing statuettes.
Right, silly shtick. Yeah.
Yeah, they just come out. They give the awards. It's very much more on a serious bent because it is about the acting profession. It's given out by actors to actors, Screen Actors Guild, right? But there's not a lot of fluff, not a lot of pomp. They get this all done in about 2 hours as opposed to the bloated almost 4 hours of an Oscar show. And so that's what I like about it. There's no nonsense. They get in, they get out, they do the awards, the people give their little speeches, and it's done the way an award show should be done, as opposed to some of these, just outrageous, I don't know, even know what they are. They're just, they're extravaganzas for extravaganza's sake, with the Oscars.
Right.
And
the other thing, too, it's funny because they 2 years in a row now, the Oscars are going without a host. And it's still bloated. It still goes too long.
Isn't that, and I'll tell you, I was a proponent of that even before it happened. Mm-hmm. I predicted after that craziness that went on with, remember when they had the wrong winner?
Oh, the best picture,
yeah. And I was like, I said, you know what? They need to just get rid of the host. Think about it. Aside from the monologue, if you watched the Golden Globes a few weeks ago, there was a lot of controversy about Ricky Gervais. He was really snarky and almost mean at times.
Yeah, just almost like he's happy to get out of the whole thing.
And that was his shtick. I don't know if that was his shtick or it was real, but my point was there was a lot of controversy. But at the end of the day, he was the host. All he really did was give that 7-minute monologue. The rest of the time, He was just there every so often, periodically saying, and here's this person, and here's that person.
Really, introduce the presenters.
I really don't, and not even all that often. I don't really think that that show needs a certified host. I just, you know, assign me. I'm sure if you're Jimmy Kimmel, or if you're somebody who likes to do that and is a host of a show, you like to do that. But in terms of the actual need or necessity, I don't see it.
Yeah, it can be overkill, especially depending on who's hosting and how they try to jump on a little trend. Where it was Billy Crystal when he made comments about winners, that, you know, as the show went on, and they have the writers writing up little one-liners backstage. And the other thing too, you know, when people say the Oscars are too long, look at all the categories. Look at all the specialty things that everybody wants to get their little award in for. It's a lot. It's just a very heavy load. And if you take away a host, maybe you can cut down some of that time.
No kidding. We'll take a quick break here. After the break, we're going to talk about some cool things on television, including tonight, the return after a couple of year hiatus of the classic award-winning and just downright hilarious show by Larry David, Curb Your Enthusiasm, returning to HBO. Tonight is the first the premiere episode of the new season 10 at 9:30. So we'll talk about the return of Larry and his travails and a few other things in the pop culture world. So stay tuned. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back after this. Hey, no switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Welcome to the show. We continue at the Pop Culture Club, and Mick, explain why I'm playing Karma Chameleon right now.
Okay, well, Karma Chameleon was performed by Boy George and Culture Club. So there's Culture Club, and it was a pop song, and you and I are talking about pop culture right now.
So get it? Pop culture, culture,
see?
Club.
It's very subtle.
Yeah, this show works on so many levels.
It is an onion. It's a very big onion.
It's like a Bullwinkle cartoon episode. You don't even, half the jokes I don't even get.
Sure.
And I'm making them. But, so we're talking to Mick Kaler here in the Pop Culture Club. Tonight, very exciting news if you're a fan of Curb Your Enthusiasm, the Larry David HBO show. Returning after 2 years of being away for season 10 tonight at 9:30 on HBO. And I know, believe me, I know that Curb Your Enthusiasm is a very polarizing show.
Sure.
You either love Larry David and his snarky and just over-the-top, comedy, or you hate it.
Right.
I love it.
I like it, but if you don't like him, if you notice, and this was even going back to the Seinfeld days, was the same way, that snarkiness and all those things that he does and all that pain-in-the-butt stuff he is, He usually doesn't win in the end.
Well, you know, it's funny. He doesn't win. So to your point, yeah, if you don't like it, he does get his comeuppance.
Yeah, so you get to root and go, you know what? He got his comeuppance again. Because that happened on the Seinfeld show a lot.
Yeah, that's definitely. I mean, George always lost.
Right, and George was basically Larry David.
Yeah.
And Larry, a lot of times, he does look like the schlub, you know?
But at the same time, just as I would say about George, who was kind of the Larry David-ish character on Seinfeld, what I will also say, when Larry brings something up, I go, it may be irritating, it may not be socially acceptable, I say, but he's right!
Sure.
He's right! When somebody, you know, cuts in front of you in line or talks loud in a movie theater, he calls them out on it, and I'm like, he's right!
Right,
you know,
he has no filter.
No, not at all, and I've been accused of that, and I am proud of that. I just like, yes. Now my wife and I watch it, and, you know, there are some episodes where she's just like, oh, my God. And I'm on the floor. You know, I'm laughing, and I'm like, sorry, but this is so funny to me. And because I do see myself in many ways as Larry David. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah, it could be a little bit of both, too. Some people love you, some people hate you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no middle ground, but sometimes I completely empathize with what Larry's saying and what he's doing and what's happening to him. Now, this season, they've been very good at keeping the lid on what the whole season may be about, because usually the season does have an overriding theme, even
right,
though
there's an arc to it. Yeah,
even though it's not potentially obvious from the first few episodes, and then we get to the end, and there's always that kicker ending, and you go, ah. I mean, one of the greatest things, one of the greatest seasons, and one of the greatest ideas that they ever had was the season where Larry was appearing in the Broadway production of The Producers.
Right, yeah, and he was doing all the rehearsals for it before he got to New York and the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I'm watching the 9 or 10 episodes of that season, and they were good, but I'm like, I don't really get this premise. I don't, you know, I mean, it's funny in a way. Mel Brooks was on, you know, Larry's pretend, you know, he's with David Schwimmer, you know, in the producers thing, and they're rehearsing, and so that was funny, and I don't get it, and I'm, but it was funny, but I'm not crazy about it. And the last episode, one of the last scenes, if you know about The Producers, which is about two guys who actually deliberately put on a losing show in order to make some money.
Yeah, the guarantee, the insurance, and all that.
Yeah, and the whole thing, that's what it's about. And so at the end of the show, on Curb Your Enthusiasm, with Larry in the lead, and Mel Brooks throughout the whole season is like, Larry, you are my guy. You are the guy to be the lead in this show. And then at the end, they pull the same ending in The Producers, where Mel Brooks is talking to his wife, who was, you know, still alive at the time, obviously, Anne Bancroft, and he said, "This is perfect. With Larry David, this is going to be a big flop."
Right, we're going to have this out of our lives.
And we're going to have, yeah. And it was like they did all those 9 episodes for that one scene.
Yeah.
And so that was genius. So I don't know where this is going. I know that John Hamm is going to be appearing in a few episodes. And I obviously some of the regulars will be back, like, you know, Richard Lewis and Jeff Garlin and Cheryl Hines and J.B. Smoove. So, I mean,
I don't think Bob Einstein is, though, because he probably passed before they made it.
Yeah, that's the sad thing. So Bob Einstein, who was, you know, Marty Funkhauser. Hi, Larry. I don't know what you're doing, Larry, but how could you do that, Larry? Yeah, he sadly, that's Albert Brooks' brother, Bob Einstein. He passed away. I'm not sure if he got in any episodes. I remember when he passed away earlier in 2019, Richard Lewis seemed literally, you know, authentically shocked that he passed away.
Yeah.
So I don't think he even filmed any episodes, which is sad because he was such a key character into that dry kind of anti-hero humor that pervades that show.
Right, and a great foil for Larry, too.
Yeah, he was great. Larry, how could you do that to my sister, Bam Bam? But yeah, so tonight on HBO, Curb Your Enthusiasm comes back. And all I could tell is, based on the trailers that I've seen, that John Hamm may be playing Larry.
Okay, in a play or a
in
movie?
Some kind of a play or movie, because he's standing next to Larry in one quick scene in the trailer. He's standing next to Larry. He's got glasses on like Larry. He's got the little sweater vest like Larry. And they kick Larry. So, you know, somebody kicks Larry out of the room, and they both look at each other and they go, "Okay, then we'll leave." So it seems as if John Hamm may be playing Larry David. So maybe that's a subplot. I don't know.
Okay, well, it's always interesting when they put extra people in. It was funny because yesterday all day HBO was rerunning selected episodes of all the seasons of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Not all of them, but just certain episodes. And, you know, I saw people like Michael J. Fox in there.
Oh, that's a great one.
And, of course, you know, the regular cast, different people showing up in different episodes. And it just reminded me of how funny the show is.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, that's the thing. Like I said, this can be a very polarizing show. I understand that. I mean, the Michael J. Fox episode that you refer to?
Yeah.
I mean, they're basically using Michael J. Fox's Parkinson's.
Right, as the joke.
As
or
the joke.
The stumbling block in it.
But the funny thing is, Michael J. Fox is using his Parkinson's.
Right.
So it's not like Larry David is making fun of Michael J. Fox. Within the plot, Michael J. Fox is so angry at Larry, he uses his own Parkinson's disease to get back at Larry.
Yeah. Hey, just, and a background on Michael J. Fox, years ago when he was diagnosed with it, Michael J. Fox used to joke that he makes a great margarita now because his handshake.
On that show. I mean, it's so I mean, as much as it's kind of sometimes cringe kind of comedy, the people that you would think are getting made fun of are actually in on the joke and making the joke.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, like I said, it can be polarizing. It's a lot like Family Guy. I think people love Family Guy or hate Family Guy. Same thing. They go right. They cross the boundaries many times. And so that it depends if you like kind of an edgy, biting humor or not. But I'll tell you, if you do, I don't think there's many shows. Because I look at Curb Your Enthusiasm as even just like a Seinfeld on steroids.
Yeah, you're right.
This is the show that Larry David probably always wanted to make, but could never put it on network television.
Yeah, that's why he's got HBO to do it. Yeah. So he can get away with that.
I have to tell you, too, there's a couple of HBO shows. I mentioned one earlier, The New Pope. I just saw the first episode. Jude Law is in it in some flashbacks, at least from the first episode that's only aired. I think it's going to be on every Monday, so the new episode will be appearing tomorrow. But John Malkovich will become the new Pope.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They just showed him in outline. And it was very cool at the very end of the episode, but I believe he does become the new Pope. So that should be a little interesting twist. And also, have you heard of this show called The Outsider?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, now that's on HBO. There's only been the first two episodes. There's another episode on tonight at 8 o'clock. It's with Jason Bateman, who I have to say, you know, of all, you know, 35 years ago, 20 years ago, on the Hogan Family, would you have ever thought that Jason Bateman would be one of the most respected actors and directors in Hollywood?
No, it's really been, if you look at his film biography on the websites and all that, it's been like the last 10, 15 years where he's just soared, where he's like in every different role and different parts, whether it be movies or television shows, where it's like, yeah, you got to plug that guy in there and put him in and play the role.
Yeah, he just won an Emmy for Ozark, which was on Netflix, and now he's in this. I guess he's producing this. I mean, let's face it, in the late 80s, early 90s, he was basically known as being Justine Bateman's brother.
Yeah, in fact, the joke was he was always her chauffeur.
Yeah. Because
he didn't have anything going acting-wise, but I think he just kind of grew into that.
And now she's his Uber driver.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, my gosh, I don't see her anymore, but this guy is everywhere. But it's based on a Stephen King story. I'm into it so far. The first two episodes were on. They showed back-to-back last week. A new one will be on tonight. I'm keeping my fingers crossed because, unfortunately, for whatever reason, Stephen King stories are never really well adapted to the screen.
Right, yeah. So somebody doesn't have the right transition between what's written and people like and what goes on screen, whether it's on TV or a movie.
It's
there's somebody's not interpreting them right. You're exactly right about that.
Yeah, there's a very good premise here about a Jason Bateman character who is accused of a crime. But he seems to have an airtight alibi. It's almost as if he's two places at one time, and it doesn't make sense to anybody. And yet the evidence is there. So that was a very intriguing premise. But so oftentimes, too, Stephen King, he has these great premises, and then the endings are always either boring or crazy or lazy. So I'm hoping that I'm not investing my time to be disappointed again at the end, because
that's the risk you take of these things, because we don't know how they're going to end.
Yeah, but so far, I'm digging the first two episodes of The Outsider on HBO, and I said tonight at 9:30, of course, you have to watch Larry David's Curb Your Enthusiasm. We'll take a quick break, talking to Mick Kaler here in the Pop Culture Club. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the snubs of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announcements and inductees that were announced this week. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. No switching. Jim Toronto with you this morning. Be here till 1 o'clock or so, about an hour, and we'll pass it off to Pete McMurray. We're in the Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler, and the new class of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees was announced this week. The Doobie Brothers, Nine Inch Nails, Depeche Mode, T-Rex, Notorious B.I.G., Whitney Houston, and also on the management side, John Landau, who is Bruce Springsteen's manager, and Irving Azoff, who is the Eagles' manager. So, interesting class. I think more interesting for, once again, who was nominated and who did not get in, including Pat Benatar, Thin Lizzy, and Soundgarden.
Yeah, I thought for sure Soundgarden would get in, and the Pat Benatar thing was very strange because Whitney Houston gets in, and I know we've been through this a million times before that's not really rock and roll, et cetera, but I mean, do you remember, I remember 1979 through about 1984, you could not turn on a radio without hearing Pat Benatar.
And you could not turn on MTV without seeing her.
Right, yeah, she was doing the videos, Love of the Battlefield, and all the other ones that she did. She was just everywhere. And then all of a sudden, she just kind of faded out.
Well, you know what kills me about this? Once again, I know the criteria. This is all very subjective, as is every Hall of Fame. But the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame seems to be overtly subjective and overtly snobby. And, you know, I'm sorry. I understand that Pat Benatar may have been a very popular and very pop-oriented rock star who maybe, you know, was just, you know, viewed as a sellout as opposed to some edgy person. But let's be honest. How does Joan Jett in the Hall of Fame,
who had two hits,
and here's Pat Benatar. And I'll tell you, because they say, oh, well, you know, Joan Jett was very influential with her girl group, you know, the Runaways. I got news for you. Just like you said, the amount of time that Pat Benatar had so many hits, dominated on the radio, dominated on MTV, she was influential to a lot of young women out there to say, hey, I want to be like Pat Benatar. So just because she sold millions of records doesn't automatically discount her as some sellout who wasn't influential just because she wasn't some, you know, tough, you know, underground, you know, cult star.
Exactly. And the other part of that, too, with Pat Benatar, her songs were rock and roll songs.
Oh, okay? Yeah. I mean, Heartbreaker.
I don't want to keep harping on Whitney Houston, but Whitney Houston's songs were not rock and roll songs, okay?
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, as a backdoor way to get her in, they may say, well, you know, she comes from a gospel and a rhythm and blues background.
There's roots in that and rock and roll.
Yeah,
blah,
and,
blah, blah,
yeah. Yeah, and that's how they do that. But let's be honest, Whitney Houston, there was not a bit of rock and roll in any of her music.
No.
If it wasn't... The big, you know, ballads, then it was pure pop.
Yeah, it was synthesizers and keyboards and strings, you know.
Yeah, I have to think that in a couple of years, to me, this is kind of the dividing line. In a couple of years, Justin Timberlake is going to be eligible.
Right.
If he gets in, then they have to change the name.
Yeah, it has to be.
Either they have to say we're the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and we're not going to continue to bastardize our concept or our title, and we're going to have to just be a niche kind of thing. But everybody who is in pop music does not belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It has a name. You either have to call it the Pop Music Hall of Fame or the Music Hall of Fame, but you are delegitimizing rock and roll as an art form if you continue to put people in like Janet Jackson or Whitney Houston or some of these rap artists who do not have a rock background.
And they're splintering off by doing that. And again, like you said, it takes the legitimacy away from the people who did get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame who were rockers.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know about Thin Lizzy. They had a few good hits. I don't know if they're, and I know in England they were much more popular. I don't know if they belong, but certainly I do think that that Pat Benatar belonged in there. And if you're going to put in Whitney Houston or Janet Jackson or Madonna, then how does Pat Benatar not get in?
Yeah, I'm actually surprised it took the Doobie Brothers as long as it took for them to get in. And then on that managerial side with John Landau and Irving Azoff, I mean, these guys should have been in a long time ago.
Yeah, I really don't know the way it goes, but very quick story related to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame about something that happened in the news today. If you saw, Bruce Springsteen's son, Sam, 25 years old, was just inducted and became a firefighter in Jersey City. And so I had to, it immediately brought me back when I saw this, because you talk about how time flies. I went to Elton John's induction ceremony at the Waldorf Astoria in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1994. If you remember, in 1994, Bruce Springsteen had not been, on the top of the charts. He was not really top of mind at that time.
Right. The stuff from 84 through 87 had kind of faded out.
He had sort of faded out. And so he wasn't all that, you know, he wasn't like, you know, the America's Poet Laureate at the time. So, he and his wife Patty Scalfa just had the baby, so I find myself pretty much as the room, you know, the room is emptying now. I'm pretty much in the ballroom of the Waldorf Astoria in New York, with just me and a round table separating me and Bruce Springsteen and his wife. We're the only ones in the room. I'm just kind of straggling, and I see Bruce, so I'm out of my mind, right? But I'm tempering my enthusiasm. And so I figure, well, let me be very topical here, not like some, you know, crazed fan. And they just had the baby, but they hadn't announced the baby's name.
Okay.
So I said, oh, congratulations on the new baby. And so they both kind of smiled and looked at each other and said, thanks. And I said, oh, well, what's his name?
Okay.
Because they hadn't publicly announced it. And they looked at each other almost as if to say, you know, should we tell him?
Still,
yeah, because
okay.
It was still kind of a secret, and they, sure. they looked at each other for a second, kind of smiled, and then Bruce looks at me, and he goes, Sam. And I go, oh, Sam, cool name. Well, congratulations. And they're both like, thank you very much. So I didn't ask for it. There were no selfies at that time, but I didn't get a picture. I didn't get an autograph. I just left it like that. So to see this kid now, 25 years old, walking and getting, officially made a fireman at 25 yeah. years old, I went, wow, does time fly? When I heard about him, I asked his name, and there he is walking up and getting his hand, you know, getting his hand shook as being a newly inducted fireman. Wow, time flies.
Funny too, because if you see the pictures that they had online, Sam's face is a perfect maturation of both
yeah.
Bruce and Patty.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is definitely.
It's not just Bruce. It's like the
no.
two of them. If you look at Bruce and Patty's faces
yeah.
and his, it's like, boy, it was just like a perfect melding there.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, thank you so much, Mick. Another great, informative, and fun pop culture segment. We will talk to you soon, and we will also hear your stuff, your song parodies on the WGN Morning News. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, pal. You take care.
Great. Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards. We'll take a quick break. No switching. Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards this morning. After the news, we will do a little royal watching. Harry and Meghan have been making the headlines this last week, and so we will discuss if they are a progressive pair or a couple of spoiled royals. But right now, we're going to go to Dave Schwann with that news. Mr. D. No, that was not written by Prince Harry and Princess Meghan. That was from the Animals. We got to get out of this place. But that seems to be the new the new theme song of, and I would say Prince Henry or Prince Harry, but I can't anymore because he's no longer a prince and she is no longer a princess. They're just When Harry Met Meghan. Of course, this week, the monarchy and Buckingham Palace were rocked with the news that Harry and Meghan decided that they would like to break away from their official royal duties as members of the royal family and lead a somewhat quote-unquote normal life and actually leave Britain and maybe go between Britain and North America, which seems to be like Canada now. It was certainly a major, major seismic shift in the tradition of the monarchy, starting with the Queen, who apparently was blindsided. From all reports, Prince Charles, the heir to Queen Elizabeth, is not very happy about this. And obviously, it certainly changed the dynamic between the future heir, William, and his brother Harry, who many think that as much as William was going to be the king by all rights and by heredity, he really was going to perhaps change the monarchy in sharing many of the duties with his brother Harry, because Harry is very popular within the within Britain. And so they were almost looking like they actually may have done it while William would have been the king in formal. Harry would have played a major role in that. But all that seems to have changed since he got married a few years ago and now had his first child. And so we've definitely, I think, in the world of not only pop culture, but just in the news, this has been one of the bigger news stories. And so I have a friend of mine who is a major royal watcher and a big, big fan of Harry and Meghan. So I thought that I would bring her on to discuss her insights as someone who really watches this stuff closely. If you listen to my podcast that appears every week on WGNplus.com, and it has been for the last 3.5 years. I'm actually up to, what, episode number 191, so I've done quite a few. I hope you are listening. It's at WGNplus.com or wherever you find your favorite podcast. A new podcast is posted every Monday, so a new one will be posted tomorrow. It's called Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, so take a look and listen for that. But I welcome to the airwaves here Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
So, lots brewing, not only this week, but even in the last 24 hours, this story continues to develop. Have you heard the latest?
Have I heard? Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, this is big. We have a royal resolution, is what I would like to call it.
Well, I want to know if this is a progressive pair or a bunch of spoiled royals. That's my view here. But tell the folks what there was a big powwow with all the heirs, Queen Elizabeth, Charles, William, and Harry, earlier this week as they were trying to figure out how do they remain a member of the family, but don't remain. This is all new charted territory. It's like having two popes when Benedict, resigned, and yet Francis is in there. But just yesterday, some really interesting resolution. Tell everybody what just happened.
Okay, so, I mean, two statements were issued yesterday, the first by the Queen, which, was a very personal and emotional statement. And the point of her statement was to basically let people know we have reached a resolution. Okay, so she was not getting into the details of this, but she was basically acknowledging that they are much loved members of the family and they will remain that way. And she's also acknowledging the challenges and the scrutiny they've experienced. And she's saying, we have come to we hope an agreement that will allow them to lead, peaceful lives. And so that is what the Queen had to say about it. Now, on the heels of that, Buckingham Palace revealed the details of this, which is that, kind of in a surprise to me. So they have agreed they will no longer be working royals. And what that means is, they will not be using their HRH titles. So
the Prince or Princess, right.
Her Royal Highness. There's been a lot of speculation about whether the Queen would let them continue to do that or not. And so the decision is that you're not working. I think the point here is that the overarching decision is you can't be half in and half out. You're either in or you're out. And so they're out. So no more HRH titles. They are required to step back from public duties. So they cannot perform any duties officially representing the Queen, including Harry's military appointments. And, a lot of the royal correspondents are saying that's a really big deal because the military is something that Harry has been very passionate about. So that's part of the deal. They will not be paid through any public funds. However, apparently, they will continue to receive an allowance from Prince Charles's estate, which they've always said had accounted for like 95% of their income. So I think they wanted people to know, like, look, we haven't really been ever taking that many funds from the public, but, obviously the British public is scrutinizing this in part because their tax dollars fund the royal family. So, this is something that people want to know about.
Yeah, we should say that, at the end of the day here, Harry and Meghan are not going to be hard up. Word is that Harry, through his inheritances and his father, already have a war chest of $35 million. That's not like having a billion, but they're certainly going to be living a very lavish lifestyle. They're not going to be living in castles. Maybe they don't want to live in castles. But what I think was key to what you were saying was that seemed to flesh out yesterday when this announcement came that they would no longer have their titles, that they would no longer be doing royal duties. They would no longer be representing the Queen. When this initially happened, it seemed as if they did want, like you were saying, that they almost wanted their cake and eat it too. They wanted all the spoils of royalty. They wanted, all the attention and to be able to do whatever they, and to have their titles. But they didn't want to have to do all the things and give all the sacrifices that were part of that. And that's that. And what I'm very impressed at is, the Queen certainly has made some, some acknowledgments here, and she has compromised. So she's proved, even though she's 92 years old, and she is certainly, the walking embodiment of the monarch tradition, she certainly made some concessions to her grandson. But at the same time, I think she did lay down the law to say, okay, if you're going to do this, I wish you luck. This is your choice, but you can't have your feet in both sides. You're either a royal or you're not. If you want the spoils of the royalty and all that comes with it, and then there's also something called duty and service. That's the payback. You can't have all the cool stuff and then be a prince a la carte. Well, I don't want to do this, but this is cool, and that's cool, but this is annoying. Well, sorry, it's all or nothing. And that's pretty much where they are, and that is very surprising. Because as we've talked, you know, personally, you know, Harry and Meghan are certainly an asset to the monarchy, very popular with the public, at least they used to be. And so by allowing them to cast themselves aside in the future, they may be hurting the popularity of the monarchy. But I give the Queen credit for saying, no, there's something about tradition, there's something about duty, and there's something about service. And that's part of the deal.
Right. And I also think, you know, it's not like a spiteful thing, you know, it's more a practical issue. I mean, the other part of this is that they've made it clear they would like to work toward financial independence. And I think that is really a euphemism for we want to go and have jobs and make money. And it gets really, really messy for royals who are working royals to have jobs. They really can't do that because the problem is they cannot be seen to be trading in on their titles and their status. So I think that's part of needing to relinquish those official titles.
And I do believe,
you know, they really do.
And I do believe that that Meghan wants to act. I think that you're going to see her in a movie. You're going to see her doing something that is back into her old stomping ground. She's already moved away from Buckingham Palace. I've read stories about her picking up some friends at the airport, and she's going about her life in this new way. I think, sadly, at least to some extent, I think this is going to be very hard for Harry. Harry was born in that bubble. Harry understands that world. You know, this was maybe a new world for Meghan, and she didn't like the scrutiny. She didn't like the formality. She maybe didn't like the fact that Harry was a spare heir. You know, that's the reality of it. You know, Prince Andrew and Prince Edward, these, if you're not the heir, if you're not Charles, like his father, the mechanism, recognizes you, but the spotlight is on the king and the heir. And that's William and that's Kate and their three children. So maybe, you know, Meghan was expecting more to this. And once she got into the mechanism, after the wedding was over, after the baby was born, all the spotlight was on her. And once those two events were finished, it's like, okay, now, just so you know, it's William and Kate, and it's George and Charlotte and Louis. That's the airline. And the other folks, we'll pay attention to you, and you'll be popular. But in terms of the tradition, that's the king. And so I think she may have had a little problem with that.
You get to stand on the balcony, but you're going to be in the back row. Yeah. You know, that's kind of how it goes.
And I have to say, you have to love the British press. Right away, they called it Megxit, which is perfect. I mean, perfect. You know, the Brexit and Megxit. I mean, you can't get a better pun than that. And then, of course, the British press that has been accused of being a little racially against Meghan for her mixed race heritage. Right away, they were calling her Yoko Ono. That she, like, Yoko apparently broke up the Beatles, and now Meghan was breaking up the royal family. I mean, so there's a lot of issues floating around here, but big stuff this week, certainly with the loss of their titles, and they will be paying back the British people $3 million, apparently, for some renovations that were made to their apartment in London.
Yes, they will. Well, yeah, and part of that is because apparently when they are in the UK, they will continue to live in that residence. But see, now they're kind of like private citizens, I suppose.
Right. I mean, they will still.
I mean, yes, they're still members of the royal family, but again, not working members of the royal family.
Yeah, I mean,
they're going to pay back the money. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you almost have to separate those, as you just said. They are members of the royal family, but they are not. But that's also a family and a business, and they are not a part of the business anymore. They're just a part of the family. Jim Toronto filling in. I'm sorry. I have to take a quick break here, Emily. Hold on. I'll be back to you. Just stay where you're at. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Very good. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. Going to take a quick break. Back talking about Harry and Meghan. What the heck's going on with those wild children? Right after this. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Hope you had a good time. If you've been with us since 9 o'clock, we've had quite an interesting show. We've had some silliness with Dean at the top. We've talked a little sports. We've talked a little pop culture. And now we're talking a little royal talk with Emily Arminetti, who is a royal watcher. We've talked about so far the official things of what the new Megxit resolution, or you said, which I like, the royal resolution.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering now, you are a royal watcher. You have been a huge supporter of Harry and Meghan, as we've talked about on my podcast many times. You root for love.
I do. Well, I don't root against it. So, yeah, I guess you could say.
You root for love.
I guess.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you should have a t-shirt that says, I root for love.
Maybe I will.
And so I want
to
know.
My birthday's in August, so, you know, okay. Feel free.
So I would like to know, we've talked about a lot the official things, but just from a royal watcher and a big fan of Harry and Meghan, what's your perspective on this? Where do you fall down on this?
I mean, in a way, I think it's a little bit sad because, I mean, this is a 1,500-year-old institution, and I feel like this was so dramatic and, you know, the way it caught the family off guard. And so I think there's something a little bit sad about this and a little bit dark about it. I also think part of their appeal was this kind of fairy tale idea, you know, that she sort of was just this, like, once again, she's a commoner, she's an American. I mean, she's certainly not the first quote-unquote commoner to marry into that family. But everything about it just seemed like a fairy tale, which, you know, and they had so much glamour about them. But I don't know. I mean, I also think at the same time, they did seem like they were really suffering. I mean, anyone who watched that documentary that they did with the British journalist Tom Bradby could see that they were both being very deeply unhappy, mostly with how they were being treated by the media. And honestly, at the end of the day, I feel like, how can you really force them to continue to live like that if they truly want out?
Well, I'll tell you, I agree with you. I think what's interesting, when I come up with an opinion, I don't make knee-jerk opinions, but when I do decide on something, I don't waver. And I have been all over the board on this one. Mm-hmm. The story itself has continued to change and has been very fluid and develops almost day by day. So it's hard to really, what you may have thought about on Tuesday, based on new facts that happen, you change your mind on Thursday. And that just happened again, with new news yesterday about them losing their titles and everything. But the one thing that seems to me that, and you hate to get into this, and I'm not trying to, you know, label anything, but this was very millennial. I mean, this smacks of the millennial tag, and I'm not making any judgments, but in terms of what the knock is against millennials, and I'm sure like right now, you know, Harry and Meghan are talking to Prince Charles and saying, okay, boomer. But this really is, you know what? I don't want to do this. This is not my thing. It's annoying. And I just think, like, you know, this is what you were born into, at least from Harry's standpoint. You know, Meghan came in, should have known what was expected. And to just bail on this, I hope that Harry is all in on this. And this is not just something that he's doing because his wife is giving him a hard time. I don't know if that's happening or not. I hope not, because, you know, as I said before, he was born in that bubble, and that's the world that he does know.
Right. He's never known any other life. So I
no.
think it will be really interesting to see how this unfolds. But, and I think it is confusing because on one hand you have, you know, when you read the reports coming out of the UK, you've got sources saying that this is all her and that she is driving this. Then you also have sources saying, you know what, Harry's wanted out for a long time. He is totally traumatized over what happened with his mother. You know, and he feels that, like, that whole life and, you know, the media obsession with her, and that all of that led to her death. And so he's wanted out for a long time too, and Meghan has just empowered him to do this. So it's hard to really get a grip on really who is driving this. But also the motivation. It's like, again, you know, I'm taking what they said in their documentary at face value, that, you know, they've had a really rough time and they don't feel they've had a lot of support. But on the flip side, there's a lot of cynical reports out there that are speculating whether this actually has more to do with the fact that they've kind of realized how powerful a brand they already have and are going to try to figure out a way to monetize that. And well, so that's a very cynical point of view.
Well, the only thing I could...
It's one that's out there, so it's hard to really know.
The only thing I hope not is that I hope that Bravo television executive Andy Cohen is not watching this, because yeah. I could just see the light bulb going on over his head. Wait a minute. Harry and Meghan, spare air's gone wild. And this is the new reality show. And I could just see this right before, you know, Housewives of Beverly Hills. We've got Harry and Meghan. And wow, I mean, the funny thing is, as crazy as an idea that is, could you imagine the ratings for that?
I can assure you that Andy Cohen has already got people on this.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, and they've said they're going to move to North America, and it sounds to me like they're saying Canada. But I think it was Sharon Osbourne was talking about this the other day on, you know, she's on a talk show, and she was saying, just wait, I bet you they'll end up in L.A. And she might be right. That said, you know, part of what their end of the deal is that they've made it clear that everything they do will continue to uphold the values of the Queen. And so what that means is they do actually have to be really careful about what they do next. In all seriousness, it will be interesting to see. I mean, Meghan, you mentioned, you know, your prediction is she may start acting again. I'm wondering if she's going to try to go kind of the more Oprah, Michelle Obama route of, like, speaking engagements and, you know, books and things like that. Like, it's hard to tell, but whatever it is they do, they can't really be seen to be doing something like kind of gross and tacky, you know?
Well, the only thing that I would say in closing here is that if they were looking to minimize the attention given to them, this only does the opposite. Because now they are an oddity, they're an anomaly, and they've almost put a spotlight on themselves again. And maybe that was the goal, at least from her mind. I'm not sure. But this story is still developing, and it is quite an interesting, especially as you said, you know, a 1,500-year-old?
I mean, I think at least 15,
yeah.
At least kind of the modern day monarchy as we know it.
I mean,
it has to be at least that old.
I mean, the thing about it is, I made a joke earlier, but it is true. In our lifetime, we've seen a lot of changes to traditions. You know, as I said, right now, in theory, we have two popes. There hadn't been a resignation of a pope in 600 years. And now a member of the royal family is not just, you know, not into it and not wanting to be it and maybe, you know, mad about their, as I said before, their role of the spare heir, but they're actually doing something about it, which was unheard of. As I said before, all those other spare heirs like Andrew and Margaret and Princess Anne, they all just bit their lip. What was that phrase you said? Don't complain. What is the...
Oh, well, that was the Queen Mother. Never complain, never explain. That was her
right.
One of her mottos.
Well, that is gone. That motto is gone in 2020. So we will see what happens on the ongoing saga. Emily Arminetti, thank you so much for joining me. And if you want to hear more of Emily, she joins me regularly on my podcast, Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, that appears with a new episode every Monday. Thanks for sharing your Sunday with us, Emily.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Anytime.
Okay. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll take a quick break. Be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto with you here on Sunday morning. Actually, it's no longer Sunday morning. It's Sunday afternoon. Been here since 9 o'clock. I hope you've been here since we came out of the starting gate at 9. Been having a good time. And like I said, we'll pass this on in about 35 minutes or 25 minutes. We'll pass the baton to Pete McMurray. And Dean is out gallivanting somewhere. He's in Los Angeles. He spoke to us at the top of the show. He seems like he's very relaxed and enjoying his time out there in the 70-degree weather as we chill here in the teens, if not lower than that. But, hey, we're Chicago. We're tough. It's Bears weather, even though the Bears aren't playing anymore. Hey, Bear fans, how you feeling about the Packers playing today, huh?
You know, I'm a Bear fan. I'm not a diehard. I don't paint my face. I don't wear jerseys. I don't, you know, wear little Bear hats on top of my head. But I'm a Bear fan. But I've never had that craziness and that pure hatred that some Bear fans have for the Green Bay Packers. So I have to say, considering that this year they were like, what, 13-3 in the regular season, and now they're playing for the conference championship, if they can beat the 49ers in San Francisco, which would be a pretty big deal, they go back to the Super Bowl. I don't know how Bear fans feel about that. All I have to say is I'm not one to pound my own chest. But while everybody was expecting the Bears to go to the Super Bowl this year, there was sky-high expectations. I didn't see it. I thought last season was a mirage when they were 12-4. I thought the defense scored most of their points for them, or certainly put them in a position to score points easily from the 10 or the 15-yard line. And I felt they were an average team at best, and they proved that in the playoffs with the double dunk, losing to an 8-8 team. So I predicted the Bears would be 7-9, 8-8 at best, and people were pouncing on me with that prediction. What are you talking about? You're a traitor. You're not a Bear fan. What are you talking about? We're going to the Super Bowl. The TV stations, the music. I mean the newspapers. The talk radio, sports stations, everybody, Bears, Bears, Bears. And I, at the end of the day, let's face it, they were 8-8. I understand that, but the Vikings put up a JV team on that last game. And so you saw what happened. I mean, the Bears won with 4 seconds left. They basically beat a bunch of scrubs, and it took them up to 4 seconds left in the game to do that. So for all intents and purposes, the Bears were 7-9. So we'll see. Interesting things. Don't forget this weekend it might be cold outside, but it's warm in Cubbyville. Cubs convention going on. A lot of news breaking out of there. Apparently, Tom Ricketts, the owner, was booed when they mentioned the new marquee network. So what a sports year for us. Usually the last several years we've been spoiled. We've had some pretty good teams. We've had championships, especially the Chicago Blackhawks. And even though while they're on a certain surge now, they've had sort of a so-so season. The Cubs certainly disappointed everybody by not making the playoffs. And right now the White Sox are building those hopes up by really opening the bank and spending a lot of money on some major free agents and some key position players. So right now, if you're a Sox fan, you certainly have to be excited as to what the future may bring. They did lose 89 games last year, so it wasn't that great of a season, but certainly the potential of how they've changed over the offseason, it'll be certainly the story at least of the beginning months of the season, to see just how that rolls out. But, yeah, it's going to be a tough day for some Bear fans, especially if Aaron Rodgers and the Packers get to the Super Bowl. That's all decided today, starting at 2 o'clock, and then I think the second game is probably around 5:30 or so. So Dean usually does a theater segment, and he also does a food segment. We don't have a theater segment today because we talk a little bit more about television. But let's talk a little bit about the theater in terms of what is a success? Is it money? Is it a great job? Something else? Join Brantley Gilbert as he discovers the answer in the world premiere musical, The Secret of My Success. This hilarious and heartfelt musical begins February 12th at Aurora's Paramount Theater. One ambitious man with the drive to succeed, tangled in a side-splitting scheme of assumed identity. Will it work, or will he get caught? Get your tickets now and find out. Beginning February 12th through March 29th, visit ParamountAurora.com. And speaking of the ParamountAurora.com theater, we are going to give away to the fifth caller at 312-981-7200 a pair of tickets to see America's Got Talent winner, Terry Fader, the ventriloquist and impressionist and comedian singer. He'll be at Aurora's Paramount Theater next Saturday, January 25th. You can get your tickets today at ParamountAurora.com. But if you are the fifth caller starting right now, you will get a pair of tickets. Is that what we give away? That's my producer today, Ashley. Bye, hun. That's how we know how to say your name. Bye, hun. I usually say hi, hun, but it's bye, hun, correct?
Bye, hun.
Bye, hun. There you go. So, fifth caller, Ashley will answer that phone. Hopefully, you will get some winning tickets. Let me know who wins that, by the way.
Oh, I will.
Oh, you will. And so, Dean also does his food segment. And We don't have a lot of time, but I just wanted to pass along a couple of things. First of all, in the news of the food world here in Chicago, I don't know if you saw this. It was just announced, I believe, on Thursday or Friday of this past week. If you live around or drive around the Chicago downtown area, and you go like near Kinzie and kind of the West Loop area, you will inevitably smell an amazing chocolate aroma that has been bathing that neighborhood for decades. And if you have been near the Blommer Chocolate Factory, even without knowing it, you know it because you can smell it. And it has been one of the great, you know, little idiosyncrasies of the city. You don't really tell a tourist to drive down the street to smell this neighborhood because it smells so good. You usually tell them to go on the architectural tour or see the Willis Tower or the John Hancock Building. But yeah, if you are driving in the West Loop area, you smell the Blommer's Chocolate Factory. And some really sad news. No. That smell will continue. That tourist attraction or that good old standby of driving through that neighborhood. Maybe you just jump in an Uber and tell them to drive near Kinzie just to smell the neighborhood. Most of the neighborhoods don't smell this good, I'll tell you that much. But sad news to this week that at the end of next month, on February 28th, the Blommer's Chocolate Factory will be closing its retail store. Now, Blommer's, I'm not sure if you know, they're really not a commercial chocolate maker. They supply the ingredients and the chocolate to many candy and confectionery makers around the world. I mean, that small little factory there on 600 West Kinzie is pumping out some major chocolate and distributing it all around the country, all around the world. So there's a lot going on in that factory, but they have had as a nice little accoutrement, if you will, a retail store where they do sell some select items that they've made on their own using their chocolate. My gosh, the chocolate pecans are, in the words of Homer Simpson, gosh, I love that place. So anyway. Not only do you smell Blommer's if you drive down that street, but if you wanted, you can go into the retail shop and buy some of their amazing chocolate. Well, sadly, Blommer's was sold a couple of years ago to an international company, and they are renovating and upgrading the entire factory there. And part of that upgrade means the end of the retail shop. So you can't go in there and buy any more of the Blommer's chocolate product that they used to sell in the retail shop at 600 West Kinzie. But you still can till now. You have about a month and a half at the end of February, February 28th. Although I wonder now, I think this year is a leap year. Hey, Blommer's, do we get an extra day? All I know is around the end of February. They said February 28th, so I don't know if they knew it was a leap year. But anyway, you've got about a month and a half. If you want to taste some of the Blommer's chocolate, maybe you've never had, maybe you've just driven by the factory and smelled it and you've never really tasted it, take it from somebody who has tasted it. It is every bit as good as the wafting aroma. And you know, as I said at the beginning of the show, you know how scent-oriented I am. I love cashmere woods as an air freshener, but my gosh, as a neighborhood freshener, you can't beat Blommer's chocolate. But yes, the retail store will be closing at the end of February. So between now and February, if you want to taste some of the great Blommer's chocolate that you've been smelling in the neighborhood, you only have a month. According to the news report, there aren't any plans right now to open that store anytime in the future. So this could be the end of another Chicago milestone. We saw the end of Fannie Mae, but that did come back. And we saw the Frango Mints. And sometimes this stuff goes away and it comes back in another form. Sometimes it goes away forever. This one may be gone forever. So if you've never tasted or if you want that last taste of some Blommer's chocolate, you have until February 28th to go to 600 West Kinzie. And I would say two things. The chocolate malted balls are amazing. and the chocolate pecans. Amazing. Producer Ashley, have you ever tasted Blommer's chocolate?
No, I haven't, but my mouth is watering.
Oh. Well, 600 West Kinzie. There's a retail store there. Go there during the week. I guarantee you will be not disappointed. So if anybody has never been there, get to Blommer's. You only have about a month and a half to go. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. We've only got a few more minutes, and then we'll pass the baton over to Pete McMurray. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll wrap this whole thing up. So, hey, listen to me. No switching. Jim Toronto, Elton Jim, filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Dino will be back next Sunday. I hope you enjoyed what we've done for the last 4 hours or so. I certainly had a good time. I certainly hope you did, too. I should mention that we gave a pair of tickets to see America's Got Talent winner Terry Fader, the ventriloquist and impressionist at Aurora's Paramount Theater. He'll be there next Saturday, January 25th. You can get your tickets at ParamountAurora.com. But Linda in Elk Grove got a pair of tickets from us. Congratulations, Linda. Enjoy that. And this is no plug here. I'm not receiving anything from anyone. But I think on Facebook I saw that Terry Fader has an Elton John ventriloquist puppet. So that must be cool. So that will be very fitting. You got a pair of tickets to see Terry Fader from Elton Jim. And hopefully he brings out his Elton John ventriloquist puppet, Linda. So I hope you enjoy that. And anyone else, once again, you can get tickets to see that next Saturday, January 25th. Tickets are available at ParamountAurora.com. So it is very cold. It is hibernation kind of weather. It is comfort food weather. And one of my favorite comfort foods is one of my, if not favorite, desserts. I am a cobbler guy. I love a good cobbler. Don't you just love a good cobbler? It's kind of like an apple pie in a dish. I don't know what it is, really, but I love it. In fact, I can't really describe it, but maybe Bob Dylan can describe it.
Now, as promised, let me tell you a bit about fruity desserts. Apple Brown Betty is a dessert with layers of apples and buttered crumbs or oats and spices. Apple Tatatong is an upside-down, caramelized apple tart. Cobbler is a spoon pie, more like a fruit stew with dumplings. Biscuit dough was dropped into the fruit before baking. That's how it got its name, because the lumps of cooked dough resembled cobblestones. Crisp is a deep dish fruit dessert made with crumb or streusel topping, and then it's baked. Crumble, on the other hand, is a British dessert in which raw fruit is topped with a crumbly pastry mixture and baked. It's like a crisp, but not as rich. Pan Dowdy is also a spoon pie. It's got fruit on the bottom and a rolled crust on top. The crust is broken up to allow the juices to come through. And finally, we have strudel. Now that's German for whirlpool or eddy. It's a type of pastry made up of many layers of very thin dough, spread with filling, then rolled and baked until crisp and golden brown. Apple strudel is probably the most famous, but you could fill it with just about anything. And it doesn't have to be sweet. It can also be savory.
I love Bob Dylan. That really was Bob Dylan. Several years ago, he had a radio show, and it used to have themes, and that was his theme, and he would play music around a theme, and one of the themes was desserts. But
I love when Bob Dylan talks about cobbler. That's where it's got its name. What did he say? Ashley, it's a spoon pie.
Oops, I'm sorry. What did he say?
It's a spoon pie.
It's a spoon pie. But it resembles, and that's where it's got its name, because it looked like cobblestones. And I love when he goes, strudel.
Who would have thought that Bob Dylan knew this much about desserts? But I bring this up because a few months ago, my wife and I went to Branson, Missouri. I've always wanted to go to Branson. I know what they always say, you know, it's kind of like, you know, this schlocky kind of place, and, you know, all the busts of tourists go, and there's a lot of has-been singers and entertainers there. But I like kitsch. I love kitsch. And Branson is the capital of kitsch. In fact, our old Ferris wheel that used to be at Navy Pier, which was replaced a couple years ago, the old one is now on the strip in Branson. Who knew? So my wife and I went to Branson. I went there specifically in order to see one of my favorite 70s acts. Remember Jim Stafford of Spiders and Snakes and My Girl Bill fame? I don't like spiders and snakes. Well, he has his own theater there. So my wife and I went there, and it's such a cool atmosphere. The entertainers are so interactive that at the intermission, he just came out into the audience and started BSing with everybody. So I was talking to him, and during the day, my wife said, oh, it's too bad that we didn't, before we came here, we didn't buy a rubber snake and a rubber spider and give it to him in honor of his song Spiders and Snakes. I was like, oh, why didn't we think of that? We walked down in downtown Branson. They have a dime store. We walk in, and they have rubber spiders and rubber snakes. So I bought a spider, bought a rubber snake, and then sure enough, there we see Jim Stafford at the intermission. I go up to him, say hi, and I say, these are for you. And he got a kick out of the rubber spider and the rubber snake. But anyway, we went to this restaurant, and this is why I'm talking about this, because I love cobbler.
It's kind of like a spoon. It's kind of like a fruit pie,
right? Is that what? A spoon pie.
A spoon pie.
A spoon pie. With biscuits, which resemble cobblestones.
So, well, we went to this restaurant, downtown Branson. I'm just telling you this, folks, if you ever get there, whether you go there because it's kitschy or you go there because it's cool, if you go to Branson, which is not far, quick ride, if you go to the Springfield International Airport, it's only about an hour drive from there. That's what we did. We literally spent a day and a half there. That's all. No big deal. And we stayed at the Lawrence Welk Resort. Perfect. Talk about kitsch. But we found this restaurant called The Farmhouse in Branson, and they had the best cobbler I've ever tasted, and I've tasted my share of cobblers. You go to The Farmhouse. I didn't know they had it. I sit down. I look on the menu, and it says blackberry cobbler, and it says the best in the world, and there's a little thing next to it that says people have driven hundreds of miles just for our cobbler. So, of course, I got to try this cobbler out. Well, I'll tell you. I took one bite, and I told my wife, it is the best cobbler, and I would drive back or fly back just to go back to this restaurant and have this blackberry cobbler. If you have any, cobbler favorites, I know we're kind of running out of time, but maybe you could put them on my Facebook page. If there's any great cobblers in the city and you know some restaurants that have great cobbler, let me know, because I'm looking for a great cobbler to match the blackberry cobbler at The Farmhouse in Branson. I would drive and I would fly for that.
Because, as you know, cobbler is a spoon pie with biscuits that resemble cobblestones.
Thank you, Bob Dylan. Best cobbler I have tasted in my life, the blackberry cobbler. In Branson at The Farmhouse restaurant. If you find yourself in the Ozarks, if you find yourself close to Branson, it would be worth a stop just for the cobbler. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. Quick break. We'll wrap this all up. No switching. Wow, time flies when you're having fun. That's been proven once again because the last 4 hours have gone by in a blink. Jim Toronto filling in here for Dean Richards. Don't worry, Dean Marino fans. Dean will be back next Sunday, but he deserves a break sometime. But I always am very appreciative of him, of asking that I fill in for him, that he trusts me to entertain you with the high standards that you are used to from a Dean Richards every Sunday here at WGN. Once again, I want to thank my guests, Mick Kaler, Lisa Wachell, and Emily Arminetti, and of course the regular crew of Dave Schwann and Andy Mazur. Great job by producer Ashley. Bye, hon.
Nailed
and,
it.
And I'll be saying bye, hon, to you now, because I'll be saying goodbye to you. And all of you have been texting in. Thank you so much for the kind messages. I enjoy myself here. I'm glad to hear and see that you're enjoying yourself, and hopefully we will be able to talk again. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. I hope you had a good time. I certainly did.